When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Ho, ho, hello, and welcome to another festive collected edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I am Paul Merrycar, and with me, as always, is the Jingle Bell Rock himself, Brian K. Reese, the K stands
Brian for... Brian Bah Humbug.
Yes, Brian K. Reese, the K stands for Kringle.
Yes.
So, hey, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and all of the things.
And all the things. Yes, happy holidays to anyone who doesn't celebrate Christmas. Yeah, this should be going out on Christmas Day. Maybe not. Yeah, I can't be trusted.
I mean, it's you know, the holidays are a broad time frame, and a lot of other holidays happen within the so-called Judeo-Christian tradition, so we're here for all of it.
We're full of it. We are full of spirits. Okay, so today on the program, we're just going to be doing a single comic book issue, which is rare for us, but and it's going to be Spider-Man's Tangled Web, 'Twas the Fight Before Christmas, by Darwin Cook and J-Bone. J-Bone?
J-Bone.
J-Bone. J-Bone. J-Bone.
He's a jabroni, right? I mean...
Yes, exactly. But before that, we're going to do our annual picking top five of the favorite comics of the years. Of the years? Let's do that again. We're going to do our annual tradition of picking our favorite comics of the year. I don't know about you. This wasn't a bad year for comics. It was just I wasn't as crazy about things as I was, say, last year.
I think there were really good things. There were ongoing comics that so I'm not going to I didn't do Detective Comics because it's ongoing. But Rom V
killing it.
We'll hear from again here in this list. But I mean, that's been very intriguing. You know, there's some new comics that have come out recently that I am intrigued by, but there's ongoing comics that I think have been very interesting that I just didn't put on the list. It hasn't been a bad year for comics. So, I mean,
yeah, like I said, I just wasn't overwhelmed by anything. Like last year, there was so many things I was just like, I can't believe this is so good. And this is so good. This year was like, that was good.
We didn't have for me, there was no Layla Starr.
Exactly.
Yeah. But then most years there hasn't been a Layla Starr. I will continue to beat that drum incessantly for the rest of my life and in terms of the brilliance of that comic. But
absolutely. And you can hear us talk about it back, was it 2 years ago? God, it was a long time ago. Yeah. Anyway, it's just scroll down. There it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's there somewhere.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get started with this thing. Do you want to do honorable mentions first?
Yeah, let me just toss out a couple honorable mentions. And these are comics that have started late. And so I don't really, they may show up next year, but they have promising starts. And so for me, it's like the new Flash, the Cy Spurrier, Diodata Flash has been fantastic. And it looks amazing. Now, some people don't like Diodato's art, and I get that. But it's so detailed, and it's so... I just really have... And I don't follow Flash regularly. So I picked this up because of Cy Spurrier, and I've been enjoying the heck out of it. The other one is Wonder Woman, Tom King and Daniel Samper's Wonder Woman, which has been so much fun to watch people lose their shit over. But it's really, really interesting. And I'm curious to see where that goes. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, might as well throw that in there. I pick that as one of my favorites of the year. I know there's, at the time of this recording, there's only 3 issues out, but I have been enjoying, for the last 3 months, I have been enjoying the hell out of that comic. So I made a pick of it.
We could talk about that further when we get to the third one. I have 4 honorable mentions, Rare Flavors, which... Oh my gosh, it's Rom V and Philippe Andrade who did Layla Starr. There's only 2 issues. I can't really talk about it yet, but my God, it's there. And the 4th one is The Expanse, Dragon's Tooth, that Andy Diggle's doing, which is the extension of, is a continuation of The Expanse books and television show. So this is technically the next season, and it's been really, it hits all my sweet spots. So I've really enjoyed Andy Deagle's take on The Expanse. So those are my honorable mentions.
Awesome.
They're there.
I only have two honorable mentions. One, keep on the Rom V train, Carnage. I don't really care for Carnage or any of the symbiotes, as you know, in general, they're fine. But Rom V has taken Carnage and made it really interesting to the point, yeah, he made it a full-on horror comic. But anyway, it was good. Rom V made me like Carnage, which that's impressive in and of itself. And then my other honorable mention, James Tynion IV and Martin Simmonds, Universal Dracula.
I wondered if you would there's what been two issues. I think I've read both of them.
Yeah, there's only two issues. It's taking the old, 1932 movie and sort of expanding on it. The best part is the art is so amazing in
Yeah.
it. The art's just it's just scary and beautiful to look at.
I mean,
Yeah.
Simmons is great. I mean, he had that a department, he did Department of Truth, right?
Yeah. Well, yes, and he's theoretically still doing Department of Truth.
Yes, come back, Department of Truth. Please come back to
Yeah.
us.
Yes. Yeah, so anyway, I've been really enjoying that, but since there's only two issues, I didn't feel right about giving it, a proper seat at the table, basically.
Yeah, and that's how I kind of felt about the ones I mentioned. It's like three of them don't have enough issues. One of them, The Expanse, has to be like it's 12 issues. It has to be a full thing, and so it just gets an honorable mention this time around.
Well, we're not going to do this in any particular order,
Right.
I don't think.
I actually have six in my top five because
Of course. Of
that's
course you
what I
do.
do.
You go first then.
Okay. So this is not an order. It's just an order of where I wrote it down as I was thinking about it. So my first one is Deep Cuts, the Kyle
Ooh.
Higgins Image series. There's only like three issues right now. I think it's taking him some time, and he has various artists working on each issue. But Deep Cuts is he's looking at the history of music, particularly jazz and blues. He's telling stories about real or fictional or fictionally based real people. It's a gorgeous comic. It is well researched, and for someone who loves those styles, jazz and blues in particular, it just really hits me. And I think the stories are it's about the joy of music, joy of creation, and so it just the issues that he's put out, and I think it's going to take him some time to get through this. It's only supposed to be like six issues, but I think it's so well researched and they're longer issues, it's going to take a little while. But Deep Cuts by Kyle Higgins, it's on Image. If you have any interest in the history of music, I mean, and 20th century music, and 20 now we're in 2021, but it's really gorgeous, wonderful stories about the joy that comes from creation.
Just to clarify, we're in 2023.
Oh, right. Did I say 20?
You said 2021.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Just keep up.
I'm thinking about the issue 21 that we're doing today.
That's what it, nice recovery.
Yeah, thank you. I
Okay.
appreciate it. Thanks for the assist.
Okay. Deep cuts. Cool. So I'm gonna just start with Wonder Woman by Tom King. I know there's only three issues at the time of this recording, but holy cow. Yes, even if it was just the way it's pissed off so many people, I would think this is one of my favorites of the year. But it's actually a really good story as well. If you're not paying attention to it, it's the government has kicked the Amazons out of America, and Wonder Woman must save her people while restoring their reputation. That's a very, very surface synopsis there. But yes, watching people. Oh, and also I should mention it hates men.
Which it doesn't, but
It
yeah.
doesn't. No, it hates misogyny.
But
Which,
it's good. It's the narrative is good too, and
yeah.
that's
Oh
the
no,
thing.
it's a
I'm
great
trying
story.
to like dance around, the controversies around it because I don't want to give the angry people the benefit of any kind of doubt. It's just really well written, and it's just the flow of it and the narrative of it, and it looks beautiful. My God, Daniel Sampier is doing the Lord's work on this.
Yeah, it looks amazing. And I know there's a lot of people out there who don't like Tom King. I think he's amazing. And his we've talked about this last year and many years before. He's made his little niche of trauma, PTSD, depression comics, and they're great.
They are. And he does, you know, not every writer is going to write a spectrum, right? And some writers just, you know, write what you know or write. I think we're going to have Tom King show up again in our list. I think that as polarizing as he is, he's a good writer. You could disagree with what he writes.
Oh, yeah.
But he's a good writer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know,
there are lots of writers I dislike that are good writers. I just don't like what they write about, and that's fine.
It's almost like art is subjective.
Yeah. That's a crazy thought.
I know. What's next on your list?
The Forged by Greg Rucka and Mike Henderson, also on Image. Greg Rucka, just, he's so good. It's like everything he touches, but this is a great kind of like sci-fi. So it's, you know, it's slow going. They're longer comics, but you know, of course, Mike Henderson is a great artist. And so, but it's just a sci-fi political science comic with, again, what Rucka seems to do well is like with some amazing main characters that he imbues with a lot of great and separate characters. It's a really fun out there comic, and I just have really, really enjoyed his work on this.
Awesome. That is one I have not read yet. So you're always good at giving me things to read at the end of the year. I always have a new list of stuff. Thank you for that. Next on my list, this is going to be a bit of a cheat, but I'll narrow it down. So I'm going to say Star Wars, The High Republic as a whole.
Huh.
I have just enjoyed the series, not just the comic books, but also I've been reading the novels and all the side material as well. But phase 3 of the High Republic has just started this year, 2023. The main line is written by Charles Soule and Jethro Marolos, I believe is how you pronounce his name. And that comic is called Shadows of Starlight. It's just really good. I think the reason I like it is that it's Star Wars, but it has nothing to do with the Skywalkers or the Mandoverse. Mm. This small window of time just after Return of the Jedi, it's like way in the past, and it's all new characters, it's all new situations, it's all new enemies. And I just really like living in this world without all the baggage of what's come after. Yeah, so I've just been really, really enjoying it. So anyway, but the High Republic has been going on for a couple of years now. I would highly suggest you can just read the comics. You don't have to read any of the novels and short stories that are also involved in the whole thing.
I might have to check it out. Because I don't have as much knowledge of the Star Wars lore as you do and many others, particularly the earlier portions of the Star Wars lore. I haven't read it, but you know,
well,
yeah.
Well, see, this is the thing. You don't have to because it's all new. It's set thousands or 1,000 years in the past before BBY or the Battle of Yavin.
Oh, I thought maybe BBY. I was like before Baby Yoda.
Oh yeah, before Baby Yoda. There you go. Yeah, I just really enjoy it. And there's going to be a series next year or maybe the year after. I don't know how the strike has affected it, called The Acolyte, which is going to be set in that time period. So
okay.
I've been enjoying it. And it's Charles Soule. Guy's good.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's I've had issues with Charles Soule in the past, but he's also, I think he had my number one from last year, mm-hmm. the Beanies comic. Right. So yeah, no, it sounds good.
Yeah, I do. My only downside was the art is good. But there's sort of like a Star Wars house style that kind of goes across all the comics, which is good. But there's nothing that just jumps out at you. It's like, this is amazing. It's just sort of.
And I get that. Like, I get that with the IDW Star Trek universe.
Exactly.
Which almost made the cut this year because the Day of Blood crossover was a lot of fun. But yeah, I mean, it's very much an IDW Star Trek house style in the same way as you were saying with Star Wars.
So. Yeah. There's a Marvel house style for Star Wars.
Yeah.
Which isn't bad. It's just not, it's not something I would say this is stunning. It's just, it's good. What's next on your list?
Local Man by Tim Seeley and Tony Fleeks. Local Man it's on Image, and it is a absolutely fantastic love letter to the early years of Image. It's very meta. It's very referential. It's very contemporary in terms of like how it's written. but it's really all about like what came after that blast of Image that happened, and all of those various characters and the big the pouches and all of that stuff. But it contextualizes it in a current setting where things are a little darker. It's not grim and gritty. It looks great. It's a lot of fun. It is very meta, but it's also it's a true crime story. Oh, not a true crime. It's a crime story. Very much like it's taking old Image and giving it an Ed Brubaker makeover.
Excellent. So sold. I will read that.
Yeah, old Image with an Ed Brubaker makeover.
Fantastic. So my next pick is also from Image. It's Swan Songs. And this is it's an anthology. It's only six issue anthology. At the time of this recording, there's only five out. Still waiting on the sixth one. It's by W. Maxwell Prince. He's the writer of Ice Cream Man.
We should probably cover at some point.
Probably. And each issue tells a different story, and it's by a different artist. The premise is it's the end of something. So it's Swan Song. So it's like the character's going to die, or there's going to be an end of an era or something. There's an ending that's happening in this. Thus the Swan Song. And you have the artists on it are amazing. Casper Wingard, who does some Star Wars stuff, but also Homesick Pilots. Felipe Andrade.
Yeah.
Manny Desolado Star does an issue.
A favorite of ours.
Yep. Caitlin Yarsky of Black Hammer fame. I was unfamiliar with this artist, but Alex Ekman-Lawn. I don't even know what to say. Absolutely amazing artwork. He does these collages, like cut paper collages laid on top of each other. Stunning. But anyway, it's an interesting premise. The stories are really unique and different. Sometimes they're funny, sometimes they're just tragic. But I've just been enjoying every month, something new.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. What's next for you?
So this is a bit of a cheat too, because it started, 50 years ago. Matthew Rosenberg and Tyler Boss's What's the Furthest Place from Here? Also on Image. Image seems to be winning the day here. It hasn't been 50 years ago, but the releases are few and far between. It's such a strange comic. It's What's the Furthest Place from Here is coming. It was the most recent issue that came out like a couple weeks ago that kind of sealed the deal for me, because the art by Tyler Boss is fantastic, and it's this weird, minimalistic, kind of grotesque, and very cartoony. Like, the most recent issue is where we see Matthew Rosenberg. We start to see where this is all leading. And it's such a interesting comic book with so many interesting ideas. It takes a very generic sort of premise of, kids left behind and there are no adults in the world, or so we think. And it has this horror premise, but then it's not a horror comic at all. It's just accelerated and accelerated and accelerated over the past 16, 17, 18 issues, however many there are. I can't remember the exact issues. It's just a marvel of storytelling and patience. But each issue is rewarding in and of its own. But when you start to the fact that that Rosenberg slow rolled us into some reveals that have just happened recently has made the previous issues even more prescient or interesting. So I just have really enjoyed this comic book over the past couple years. And now that I start to see where it's going, it's quite something.
I would agree. I am way behind on it. I started it a while back. I just have a backlog of comics that I haven't finished yet. So it's good to know some of that's paid off. It's definitely a show don't tell type of storytelling, right, for sure. I mean, it's intriguing, and I wonder where this is going. So it makes me happy to hear that it's paying off. My next one is World Tree, or Woe World Tour 33 by James Tynion.
Making my list.
So it's James Tynion the Fourth and Fernando Blanco, with colors by Jordi Belair. And basically, you put Jordi Belair on something and it's already 1,000 times better.
Exactly.
Yeah. So also from Image, did I say that? Yeah. So it's there's a computer virus or a computer program, which if you look at it, it makes you a psychotic killer. Oh, and there's a statuesque naked woman killing people.
Yes.
Which is always fun. No, but it's
throughout.
But it's
for those who enjoy those things.
But it's classic James Tynion. It's just it's horror. It's techno. It's techno and technological. I've just and the art is stunning and brutal. There are some battles in there, like wow. But yeah, I've just been enjoying it immensely. What's next on your list, sir?
What's next for me is because comics should be fun, and I'm referencing a website that some folks will have remembered. I'm just going to go with Peacemaker Tries Hard because it's Kyle Starks and Steve Pugh.
Pew-pew.
It's big. It's dumb. Kyle Starks is a national treasure or international treasure. I don't know where he's from. And Steve Pugh is one of the great classic comic artists. And it's so good to see him getting work. It's a ridiculous comic. Completely, intentionally ridiculous. Kyle Starks... You introduced me to Kyle Starks. I hadn't read Kyle Starks till we did Big Rock Mountain or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been a follower ever since. And letting Kyle Starks loose in the DC universe with fantastic art by Steve Pugh was just fun. Is it an important comic? Not remotely. Did I laugh out loud reading this comic book? Yes, I did. Many, many, many times. And I'm not even a Peacemaker fan in the comics, although I love the show too. But setting Kyle Starks loose on Peacemaker was... Somebody deserves a raise for that.
It is kind of funny how Peacemaker has suddenly become, you know, a legitimate character now.
Right. He's the new Deadpool, you know, or whatever.
Very cool. Again, haven't read that one, but it's been on my list of things to get to. My last one is, again, a little bit of a cheat because it technically started in 2022, but it's Damn Them All.
That almost made my list too.
By Cy Spurrier and Charlie Adlard. You and I really enjoyed the John Constantine run, the Hellblazer run by Simon Spurrier.
And I have something to say about that when we're done. But
yeah, go ahead. This, obviously, Cy Spurrier had a few more ideas for that series.
Yes, he did.
Yes. If you ever want to know where that would have gone had it not been canceled, read Damn Them All. There's just so many things. Like just the main character, Ellie Hawthorne, is Bloody L. Bloody L.
Damn Them All is great.
Yeah.
And, I'm caught up and I've been enjoying every issue of that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I just love the fact there's so many things of L's uncle is an infamous magician and a cult detective who died. Oh, I just love that.
Yeah, John Constantine.
I know. Yeah, his comic was canceled, so he died. You know, you have to do it. Chef's kiss, baby. Yeah, it's been great. It's horror and it's just awesome. Been loving it.
That's on Boom, right?
Yes, it is Boom. So, Brian, what is the your sixth pick for our top five?
The sixth book in my top five. Again, yes. This isn't in order. It's Danger Street. It's Tom King. It's Jorge Fornes, who, again, some of these artists, so many of this just has so many great artists too. So it's Tom. I mean, I had to pick a Tom King, right? So I went Danger Street because the whole Talking Helmet of Fate presented as a epic quest.
Never mind. I was going to make a euphemism joke, but okay, the Talking Helmet of Fate.
It just wrapped up. Final issue just dropped. I felt it was satisfying. They had the one issue in particular, which was the and I forget the names of the characters. It was a Manhunter, and it was there's one issue that is just a fight. The whole issue is philosophy. It's just them talking philosophy while they're fighting. Wonderfully presented by Fornes.
It reminded, you know how in the old 70s, 80s comics where there would be a fight and they're having a full-on conversation with each other.
Right.
Yeah, it's like that. But what if the conversation was, you know, relevant and important?
There's a little bit of Princess Bride in it. You know what I mean? It's like...
Yes, exactly.
There's a little bit of Monty Python. It just, it may be my favorite issue, single issue of the year. But Danger Street also, you know, I mean, when the Warlord... And the Starman, not you know, the Starman of recent note, but as characters, and it just, and for some reason the New Gods are still involved because Tom King loves the New Gods.
Tom King loves to go back to, if not obscure characters, then characters who haven't gotten a lot of love recently, and just reinventing them, and it's brilliant. Danger Street, by the way, was going to go on my list, but I knew Brian was going to pick it, so I allowed it. I bequeathed it to you, sir.
Yeah, it's just good comics, regardless of it. It is keeping with Tom King's sort of MO in many ways, but he just gives an interesting spin on so many things, and to deny that him that, or to just toss him off. I mean, not literally, please. But,
none of my business. Get back to the helmet of
fate. The helmet of fate. But I looked forward to reading it, and I look forward to seeing what he was going to do with these obscure characters and how he was going to work through the narrative. And I think he did a great job, and I really enjoyed this comic. So
I love reading Tom King because it's character studies. He comes up with a really interesting scenario to put these characters in and then explores how they feel in this particular situation.
And that to me is like, as someone who's been reading comics for, I don't know, 45, I don't know when I picked up my first comic, but like, so let's say 45 years, let's say I was six. Now everybody knows how old I am. I love when I run into a comic book like this, that is character studies, that is something different than just the usual thing that I've been reading over and over again. And it's not everybody's cup of tea. Again, people can be mad at us for liking Tom King. You can't be mad at us for liking somebody. That's none of your damn business. Yes. It's like, there's no, you're wrong for liking the thing. But I just really think that, especially comics like Danger Street, and again, last year with Hitman, it just really, I've reached the point where, like, I really like to see writers doing something different. And that's with a lot of the stuff that I've mentioned, too.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely.
And can I give my top five for 2024?
Sure. Looking forward to things that haven't come out yet.
Yeah, my top one of the comics in my top five for 2024 has not come out yet. I haven't read it yet, but it's Cy Spurrier's new Hellblazer comic.
Oh yeah,
coming out next year.
Yeah, which is going to be the sequel to Damn Them All.
Yes, which is also going to bring in Sandman and Swamp Thing, and I'm already pre-biased, and I'm really, 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 and it's Aaron Campbell, so it's Cy Spurrier and Aaron Campbell back on Hellblazer. It's going to be great. I haven't read a single page of it, but I'm biased.
I want to throw in one more honorable mention now that you just mentioned that. Cy Spurrier also started up Coda again this year.
Oh, right. Yeah, I saw that.
And it's great. That's his post-apocalyptic crazy fantasy comic, and it's brilliant. Anyway, continue. What else are you looking forward to?
That's it.
So that's our picks. I'll put them in the show notes so that you can check them all out. Now let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to see something that's not a character study. It's Spider-Man's Christmas Extravaganza. And we're back. Brian, this is your choice for the festivities of the Christmas holiday.
Yes. I don't know if this comic will match the brilliance that was last year's Christmas episode, but here we go. Christmas and comic books are a time-honored tradition, dating all the way back to the 1930s, with Santa first appearing on the covers of Toy World Funnies and Famous Funnies, respectively. The floodgates open, every publisher, large and small, has capitalized on the medium's unique ability to present the fantastical to tell a myriad of holiday stories. These stories are legion, and they run a massive gamut of style and mood. From solemn to silly, joyous to dark, absurd to deeply affecting, most of these are throwaways, but some have nostalgia and a way to connect to the season in unique ways. Today, we are taking a look at 2002's Spider-Man's Tangled Web number 21. Written and drawn by the immortal Darwin Cook, with inks by the brilliant Jay Bone, the story is a fresh and rollicking tale that brings together some of Marvel's greatest heroes in a snowbound New York on Christmas Eve. And even J. Jonah Jameson gets some good moments. The much put upon Peter Parker is naturally tasked with purchasing a gift for Jameson, but instead finds himself in possession of some accidentally abandoned kids, who he promptly brings back to the Daily Bugle and its ongoing Christmas party. Hilarity ensues. Last-minute Christmas shopping at Macy's turns into a tour-de-force, knock-down, drag-em-out battle. Someone wears a lampshade on their head, Jameson gets called Papa-san, the Fantastic Four get involved, and Wasp refuses to be a fly girl. Of course, Spider-Man accidentally saves the day. Rendered with zany energy by Darwin Cook, this is an incredibly fun but affecting entry into the pantheon, as only Cook can do. One of my very favorites amongst the multitude of Xmas stories. So, Paul, single issue, Christmas story, Spider-Man, Darwin Cook, all of the good stuff, all wrapped up in a nice package with a bow. What did you think?
Well, the first thing I just have to say is this is so cute.
Mm-hmm.
This is just an adorable story, and I like it. I have questions. Like, for instance, some kids were just left behind, and, you know, some guy in the park is allowed to take them home.
This is comics, Paul.
But, okay, no one decided to go back for those kids? Oh, well.
Yeah, it's never quite explained, right? I mean, it's just like, you know, oh, they forgot these kids, and they're already on a train going somewhere else, so yep, you know, someone will take care of them. It's Christmas Eve.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, they do take great pains to say that, you know, there's a snowstorm and some the phone lines are down.
Right.
Things like that. But no, this is just a fun little story. And Darwin Cook's art, I guess the word whimsy keeps popping into my head.
Right.
Yeah.
He was always very good at that. And I mean, he could do some serious, his Parker work is amazing as well, but that's a, you know, darker, more serious sort of thing. But, you know, oh, the loss of Darwin Cook still hurts the comics industry, I think. I mean, reading this and him being able to have like this joyous kind of fun moment writing a comic and illustrating it. And Jay Bone should never, who is an illustrator of his own great right.
Yeah, I don't, inkers don't get enough credit.
No.
A poorly inked, it could be the most finely drawn image ever put into a comic. If you ink it incorrectly, it's just a muddled mess. So.
Well, and colorists too, you mentioned Jordy Belair. You know, it's just the great thing about comics is the collaborative nature of it. Absolutely. I don't even know where to start. This is whimsy at its best.
Yes, absolutely. And it's just, it's fun. It's gags. One of my favorites is when one of the girls hugs J. Jonah Jameson's leg and he says, it's attached itself.
Right. But the base plot is that, of course, it starts off, Peter Parker is sent out to get a crystal unicorn for J. Jonah Jameson for his wife. And so it's a nice little intro. It basically tells 20 panels of story in just two.
Yeah, well, there's a neat little introduction, which is just text and laid out.
A very lovely outro, which we'll get to. But yeah, essentially, yeah, Peter Parker gets distracted, as Peter Parker is wont to do. And so he rescues these kids and brings them back to the holiday party at the Daily Bugle, which is a perfectly safe and normal.
The secondhand smoke alone would be devastating to these kids.
And so, of course, then so Peter Parker then, of course, is like, oh, I forgot to get the crystal unicorn. So he goes back, but he ends up buying gifts for the kids.
The gift is wonderful.
It's Spider-Man action figures.
Yes, he buys everyone a Spider-Man action figure.
There's a great scene at some point where it shows the kids playing with the Spider-Man action figures, and one of them has popped the head off.
As one who has popped the head off of every one of my action figures, I get that one. Yeah.
And it's just this great, it's just a tiny little piece of like a larger splash page. Kid being very sad about Spider-Man's head being popped off.
Yep. Yeah, there's not, this should be pointed out, I guess, that, you know, you have all the story going on, but then there's little just comments in the background and, you know, little gags.
Once again, it's just, his backgrounds are amazing, and there's actually a lot going on that's really funny. He's just so good. I could just spend the rest of this just saying Darwin Cook, Darwin Cook, Darwin Cook, Darwin Cook. So Spider-Man comes back with the toys for the kids, or Peter Parker. Spider-Man comes back and then becomes Peter Parker, and Peter Parker delivers the toys to the kids.
And they're all happy, of course, except J. Jonah Jameson does not like the fact that everyone gets a Spider-Man action figure.
As he would not.
Yes, exactly. But then, in a nice little transition, we get The Thing, Ben Grimm, giving Johnny Storm his Christmas present, which is a Spider-Man action figure.
Yes!
Yes. I thought that was a great little transition.
There are several of those really clever transitions And so, of course, and Johnny Storm is like, man, why would you give me this? You know, and things like, well, I see the way you look at Spider-Man. Ben Grimm is like, it kind of feels like he might have a thing for Spider-Man, which leads to Johnny Storm and Ben Grimm fighting each other. Not really fighting. This isn't like a big blowout, but, you know, it's what they do.
Yes. But, The Thing does say, I'm going to moitalize you.
I'm going to myrtleize you. Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
And of course, then, you know, Sue Storm and Crystal, the Inhuman, come in and Ben Grimm gets blamed because he gets blamed for everything he does.
Yes. Well, they happen to come in just when he's retaliating. By the way, I mean, this, you don't need to know all the deep lore of the Fantastic Four, but there's a lot in here.
Yeah.
I mean, just the fact that Crystal is there and Medusa. Darwin Cook knows his history, apparently.
He does. And it's the great scene there is like, so in the Fantastic Four bit that comes in the middle of this, they're looking for Medusa, who's missing. And that's why Crystal's there. Reed Richards, of course, is working on trying to track down Medusa. And there's great comedic visuals where he's creating this thing. And of course, Janet Van Dyne, the Wasp, shows up.
Feliz Navidad, fellow shoppers, she says.
Who then references or then makes a joke about how Reed Richards is actually more of a wet blanket than Hank Pym.
Wow.
This is fun and light. We're not going to go into.
Yes, exactly. So the gals go off shopping.
Yes, the gals.
The gals. I do think it's kind of funny when they get into the Fantastic Four car, and as they take off, they yell, "Charge it!" Which is, it's stereotypical, but it's clever.
Yeah, I think it's more Cook playing with as opposed to being sexist.
He's just taking all the different tropes and playing.
But it is, Medusa's missing on Christmas Eve. So Janet Van Dyne, Sue Storm, and Crystal go shopping.
To be fair, Reed says, I'm doing everything I can to find her. You guys just go do your shopping and I'll take care of it.
And all of this is to get them to Macy's. Because on Christmas Eve in New York, when there's a snowstorm, all roads lead to Macy's.
Hey, if Hollywood has taught me nothing, it's that everything goes to Macy's on Christmas.
Yes.
At Macy's, Spider-Man is making appearance. I'm using Spider-Man in air quotes. And what looks to be a child comes walking into Macy's with a giant snowman. Is it a snow woman?
It's a snow person.
It's a snow person.
No person.
That's no person. That's my bomb. Anyway, there's a criminal element entering Macy's.
Right. As there should be. I mean, it's a comic book. We also find out, so Spider-Man is supposed to make an appearance at Macy's. But of course, Spider-Man is Flash Thompson.
Flash Thompson, who...
has been preparing, apparently, for this role his whole life.
He's Spider-Man's biggest fan.
He is.
Yeah. There's this thing about the store manager and his secretary or his assistant making these snide comments or snide thoughts about him the whole time.
Yeah, Worm. The store manager is terrible, and his assistant is just completely ripping him to shreds with everything he says.
Oh yeah, she despises the man, which is
clearly
it's nice. You know, I don't think people use the insult "worm" enough. You worm.
Yes, worm. So what follows is there's a lot of back and forth between what's happening at Macy's and what's happening at the Daily Bugle. What's happening at the Daily Bugle is a lot of fun. J. Jonah Jameson has his heart slowly melting when it comes to the kids. And the papa-san, the girl that attaches herself to his leg and calls him papa-san, that happens a couple times. Jameson, of course, we all know he has a heart of gold somewhere under there, right?
Yes, of course.
And of course, he's slowly warming to the kids, while at the same time yelling at Peter Parker because Peter Parker spent all his money on the Spider-Man toys and not getting this mythical crystal unicorn. I love the fact that it's a unicorn.
And again, this is one of those transitions where Jameson says, well, at least you got my wife's gift, right? And then it cuts to Macy's with Crystal and Janet Van Dyne looking at the unicorn going, ooh, I love it.
So Crystal and Janet and Sue are looking for a gift for Black Bolt.
So they're going to get him a crystal unicorn.
And Janet Van Dyne, of course, is like, well, maybe something else. And then, you know, I think they recommended some kind of like workout clothes.
Casual wear.
Casual wear.
Yes.
Right. And then, of course, that leads to a humorous bit with them talking about a Fantastic Four play set. Sue Storm is against it because she claims that she doesn't want Franklin playing with members of the family as a toy. And Janet Van Dyne, I think, brings up, it's like, oh no, you just don't like how your butt looks.
Yes, exactly. That's kind of a running gag that goes on for a bit.
And that continues to be a running gag. I mean, there's so many wonderful little moments.
Just to go back and praise Darwin Cook again, the way this masterfully weaves things in, you know, because you have the conversation between the ladies, mm-hmm. and as they go down an escalator, another escalator, or they're going down and then another escalator, you see the bad guys. And that's a transition. Right. It's just beautifully transitions from one conversation to another.
Yeah. And for a throwaway Christmas issue of a comic book, the level of detail is just out of this world.
Absolutely. Continue. Lead us on, sir.
There's a whole lot of things going on here. But so we have sort of some interactions with people at Macy's. We still have stuff going on at the Daily Bugle, including a guy with a lampshade on his head. There's some naughty bits. There's this wonderful bit where, like, the background, there's a lot of background conversation at the Daily Bugle, and there's two couples talking, and we're only getting a snip of their conversation, where we only get a brief part of their conversation. They're talking about something possibly very naughty going on. You didn't catch that? Oh, I didn't write it down. If you go back and read this, you'll see it. We have the ellipses before and the ellipses after, so we're only getting but it's suggestive of some naughty goings-ons.
Really? I guess I missed that.
Yeah. No, it's, but that's fun. I mean, it's in the background. It's part of, like, background chatter. So there's no through line on it. It, again, it's like in the same way that you see, like, at some point, a guy sitting on a desk with a lampshade on his head, and a woman's talking to him, and she looks like, oh God, here he is. And then the next panel, he falls off, and she's laughing. This is all behind the scenes. This is just background imagery to plot going on in front.
Yep, this little gag's going on, like the kid with the head popping off the...
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff.
Like, at some point, Peter Parker, Spider-Man has to go back to Macy's to get that damn unicorn. Off he goes. Meanwhile, the mysterious figure and the large snow person semi-reveal themselves. Oh, let's not forget that Santa Claus has to go to the bathroom.
Yes, he's Santa with the smallest bladder.
Santa with the smallest bladder. We're back at Macy's. So Spider-Man is on his way back to Macy's. Meanwhile, at Macy's, the mysterious villainous figure who came in with the large snow person has revealed that they're here to rob Macy's on Christmas Eve. And they're using some kind of dust or something to manipulate some of the people at Macy's. And one of those is, I'm going to call him Spidey Flash, and security guard, Joe. God bless Joe. He's just a security guard. So the mysterious figure then throws some dust or something on Spider Flash and the Snow Person. And it turns out the Snow Person is, wait for it, Medusa!
Dun, dun, dun! Yeah, Medusa is acting very strange.
Yeah. And so Medusa and Spider Flash are then tasked to ripping off Macy's and you know, the people there on the floor that they're at. The mysterious figure is taking all their money and taking the money from the cash or from the cash registers, whatever.
It's a superhero crime spree.
As
somebody screams from the audience.
So, of course, Janet Van Dyne, Sue Storm, and Crystal come onto the scene, and they're like, oh, no, we knew Spider-Man was a bad guy. What's going on with Medusa? But, of course, they fly into action.
Right before they do, of course, Sue Storm is looking regretfully at the Fantastic Four playset, bemoaning the size of her caboose.
Mm-hmm.
Which, there's so many things, like caboose instead of butt. at the party, one of the women calls the kids the cootie brigade. Which, cooties, really?
So, of course, everybody springs into action, and then a big, giant, massive, multi-page fight breaks out between Spider-Flash, Medusa, Sue Storm, Janet Van Dyne, and Crystal.
Well, Crystal really doesn't do anything.
Well, she tries.
She tries. Well, she gets all wrapped up in Medusa's hair, so.
It does get all wrapped up.
And she doesn't do whatever it is her superpower is.
Yeah, that changes so much. Her powers feel very inhuman to me, so.
Yes, exactly.
This big fight breaks out, and hilarity ensues. And it's hilarity. Darwin Cook. Visually, there's so many wonderful things going on.
Well, the Spider Flash tries at one point to capture Janet Van Dyne in a bug trap, which gets to your perfect, wonderful comment in the intro where she says she's not a fly girl.
2002. We'll forgive it.
Meanwhile,
back at the Daily Bugle, Jameson gets wind of what's going on at Macy's because it's reported over the radio, and this is it, because it's Spider-Man doing bad things, right? Spider-Man is like stealing everybody's money, and Jameson is like, this is it, this is the greatest moment of my life, this is what I've lived for forever. And so his first response to that is to bundle up all the kids,
take them out in the snowstorm
in a sleigh to go to Macy's so he can show them how bad Spider-Man is.
Yes, to destroy their belief in Santa, in Spider-Man.
And of course, there's actually, once again, through all of this, there's a touching scene where, like, Betty, his secretary? I can't remember exactly. Is like, you actually like these kids, don't you? And he kind of grudgingly admits it.
But then, Spider-Flash wields a chainsaw. Just the idea, the look of Spider-Man, I know it's not really Spider-Man, but seeing him holding a chainsaw, attacking everyone with a chainsaw, it's actually a pretty damn good image.
It's so good. Everything about this is so wonderfully, perfectly plotted and visualized. So at some point, so then Peter Parker catches wind, and so he has to go. So then we have him taking off for Macy's. Meanwhile, the Fantastic Four, the remainder of the Fantastic Four are like, oh, Medusa's been found. She's at Macy's and she's evil. So here comes Johnny Storm, Reed Richards, and Ben Grimm coming into Macy's as well. So all, as we said, all things become Macy's at Christmas. Massive convergence coming into Macy's. And at some point we have an elevator scene with Steve Buscemi. Right? That's Steve Buscemi as the elevator operator.
Okay. I thought it was just, is it really supposed to be Steve Buscemi?
I think it's pretty clearly Steve Buscemi.
Okay. I knew it looked like him, but okay. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he even gives us his ho-ho.
There's a wonderful little fight between, so everybody's converging onto Macy's, and mm-hmm. Spider-Man takes on Medusa, and there's a really great scene of them fighting. you know, Medusa uses her hair to pick up a bowling ball in the finger holes, which is lovely. Yeah, there's just
what's the thing where it's like
Rube Goldberg.
Yeah, so the bowling ball becomes a Rube Goldberg situation.
Spider-Man jumps out of the way. It hits a snowboard, which springs it off. That hits a dummy, which lands on a board, which shoots a saw into the air.
Yeah, it's completely Rube Goldberg. And by this point, everybody's there, and it's a battle royale. At this point, it's revealed that the bad guy, the bad guy that came in with the snow person who was Medusa, is of course Puppet Master.
Yes.
Who hates Christmas because people are happy and he's not happy, partly because his daughter doesn't love him. The whole bowling ball thing leads to Spider-Man. So I got to go back.
Go back. So
the bowling ball thing is going on. Meanwhile, the Fantastic Four have shown up. Spider-Man and Thing get into it. And so the Thing punches Spider-Man, as he does, and Spider-Man goes flying off. Meanwhile, this bowling ball thing is happening.
Well, and Spider-Man does actually, something falls onto Medusa, and he does, you know, make sure that she's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he gets up, but yes, you're right. I'm getting the narrative wrong. So yes, the bowling ball all happens. Medusa accidentally gets knocked out because the bowling ball ends up hitting a giant present, like hanging from the ceiling, and it knocks her out.
Exactly.
Then Spider-Man gets into an interaction with the Thing, and so the Thing punches him, and so, of course, Spider-Man goes flying through the air, and who does he fall on but Puppet Master, dressed as Santa Claus, who's trying to escape with a big bag of money. So Spider-Man falls on top of Puppet Master accidentally, and then knocks him out, and everything is solved. Meanwhile, Jonah Jameson has finally shown up with the kids, and he's pointing it out and saying, "See, Spider-Man is the worst." He has a quote. I think I wrote it down. Here it is. So he's like, "There now, kiddies. See how Spider-Man ruined Christmas? How do you like that?"
Yes, and they're very unhappy by that. But it's not true, and it came to pass, and there's a lovely little...
It's a two-page spread done in like sort of a sepia tone. It's explanatory as opposed to...
Yeah.
As opposed to like action-oriented.
Yeah, and it's done as like little scenes in Christmas ornaments hanging on a tree.
Right.
Just very, very nice.
And, you know, I mean, we find out, you know, I mean, Black Bolt gets a chainsaw.
Of course, the chainsaw that was used to chase him around.
Right. Yeah. Sue Storm gets to go home and glaze a ham.
Which is what, yeah. Is that a euphemism?
Yeah, well, you know, that's between her and Reed. I don't want to, like, stretch this idea out too long.
Nicely done.
I left that open, yeah.
I think you're reading too much into it.
Oh, hey.
So continue.
I'll storm out. But a Puppet Master, who had a kind of a nice moment, you know, where he was like, everybody's happy and I'm not happy. And that's why he was robbing Macy's.
Yeah. Again, another deep cut that the Puppet Master is actually the father of
Alicia.
Yes. Who's Ben Grimm's girlfriend.
So, of course, he had a sad, and of course, he's going to jail. But then Ben Grimm brings Alicia to visit her father in jail, which is lovely.
Yes.
Jonah Jameson gets the crystal unicorn. And then in one of the nicest moments of the whole comic, we find out Jameson had promised Peter Parker a gift. One of the running themes of this, of course, was that Mary Jane was trapped in Philly because of the storm.
And you know, there's nothing worse than being trapped in Philly.
I can only imagine the horrors. So Peter Parker was going to spend Christmas by himself. And that's a running, ongoing sadness that he has this. But it turns out that J. Jonah Jameson's gift to Peter Parker, his much put upon photographer employee was to find a way to get Mary Jane back into New York.
Yeah, and Aunt May, which is nice.
And Aunt May, but Aunt May was already there.
Anyway, so it's just nice. You see at the door.
So the end of it, of course, is that Jameson, his gift to Peter Parker, was to find a way to get Mary Jane back into New York, which is lovely.
It's lovely.
It's lovely. It's nice.
Yeah. A little Mary Jane on Christmas makes everything nicer. This is me speaking from Colorado, of course.
You know, I mean, he had a first dance. He had a last dance. But so. The whole wrap up, and of course the kids are part of this too, and they're happy and everybody's happy. Yeah. And it's a lovely ending that makes every single character, even though we know that they're terrible in certain ways, like outside of this issue, everybody gets a nice moment and everybody gets to be nice.
Yeah. One day a year, everyone gets to be happy.
Right.
And even the fight, which is, you know, the fight is really... It's goofy. It's not like a vicious fight or anything. It's all kind of just silly and slapstick.
But it goes on and on, but it's fun to look at.
Oh, absolutely.
Sometimes fight scenes in comics, I get a little, you know, swipe left. But every panel of the fight scene.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I'm looking at intensely because of all of the wonderful extra things Darwin Cook adds into that.
Yeah. And it's just... Like I said before, it's just the way everything flows and moves. And I don't know. It's just perfect. It's lovely.
I don't know if we're presenting this great Christmas. I mean, the spirit of the season is very strongly represented in this. Whatever spirit, whatever season you want, or whatever just way to be human in general is represented in this comic. Now it's bright and shiny with lots of presents and greens and reds and lots of Christmas wrapping all over the scenes. So this is a Christmas comic book.
Oh, absolutely. You know, but it's got all the trappings and tropes of Christmas, trees and ornaments, lots of presents.
Yeah. But I think, Cook also avoided some of the more generic, you know, this is not a Christmas Carol. A lot of comics fall into like a Christmas Carol theme.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not dark. It's not about...
It's not an It's a Wonderful Life kind of thing.
Right. I mean, this is just bright and shiny and tinkly.
Just like the Santa Claus. It feels
like, you know, like an aluminum Christmas tree.
Yes. Like I said at the beginning, it's just so cute.
Yeah. I don't know if this is essential, but this, as I mentioned in my intro, certainly has leapfrogged into when I go back every holiday season and I try to like pick out certain Christmas comics that I know for nostalgia reasons and I read them. You know, there's a ton of Archie Christmas stuff that's out there, which is fun to read. But, you know, there's a lot of thousands and thousands of Christmas stories being told in comics from Marvel, DC, Image, Boom, Dark Horse, whatever comic company you want, going all the way back to the 30s. I randomly ran across this when I was researching what to recommend. And so I had like 20 different Christmas comics that I read to try to figure out what I wanted to recommend. And this one just made me the happiest.
Yes. And I was actually glad that you picked this one because it's just so nice.
I wanted to be happy. It's this shitty world out there. And I wanted to be happy and that a comic book could make me happy.
There you go.
I think that was pretty great.
Yeah. Yes. I like that end of year sentiment. It's a shitty world out there. Just be happy. So you're right. This is just a lovely way to celebrate the holidays.
However you choose. And I realize this is very Christmas centric, but
it's you know, it's secular Christmas centric.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's very secular. Yeah, there's no...
There's no Baby J, as we call him.
Yeah, there's no Baby J.
J. Jonah Jameson.
There's no intent other than... A sense of wonder and joy. And there's a lot of wonder and joy in this, if we haven't clarified that.
Yeah. It is pure Darwin Cook. You know, I love reading his comics. let's just end it there, shall we? A wonderful choice. I had not read this before.
I hadn't either before I researched. So
what a lovely find. Yes. Next time. So by the way, this should, like I said, should be out on Christmas Day in 2023. So we're gonna ring in 2024, and then when we come back in the brand new year, what's mm-hmm. our first? It's your choice, Brian. What's the first thing we're going to talk about?
Well, time being what it is, and since we're going forward in time, I am going to recommend The Flash.
Finally,
we're going to do The Flash. It's going to be Mark Waid's Flash, featuring Mark Waid and Mike Waringo.
Okay. Excellent. So yeah, let's wade into some Flash.
I reserve the right to change the collection that we read, but it will, at the end of the day, be Flash by Mark Waid.
Awesome. That's a great way to ring in the new year. yeah, to get up and running in the new year. Yeah.
I don't want to force the issue. I don't want to race through these recommendations.
I have nothing, you know. I'm caught with my puns down, actually. So
we'll have to do a lightning round.
That's right. Oh man, you're better at this than I am.
Not really. Just maybe right now.
Yeah. So anyway, that's great. We're gonna do Flash in the new year, and you know, just thanks everybody for listening. There might be some changes coming up in the new year as far as how I release these, but we'll talk about that when the time comes. Until then, leave us a comment. Tell us what you think of Spider-Man's Tangled Web and Christmas comics in general. Everybody, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year. And until next time, keep reading comics.
And Happy New Year and Happy Holidays to everybody. Be good to each other, no matter what.
Good night, everybody.
Say good night, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter @collectededpod. That's collected, EDPOD. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained?